to Ann Arbor. And from Ann Arbor...
When were you at
UMass? Okay, I got out of the Army in 70, and we were at UMass, and then Donna got her teaching degree there until about, like, 70.
UMass Boston? UMass Amherst?
UMass Amherst, yep.
UMass Amherst.
That's right. And
I was born in Northampton.
No kidding!
My mom.
And then we lived there.
And you lived in Northampton?
Yeah,
my parents
on Washington Street.
Okay.
Oh, I know. It's a small world.
It is a small world.
You know, Route 9.
And we had to move to East Hampton because we couldn't afford the rent.
Northampton. Those uppity people up there in Northampton.
And East Hampton was a whole different world. Mm-hmm. Yes. Do you know East Hampton?
I don't.
It was rough. Yeah. It was,
Mount Tom is in the distance, and in the fall, I mean, that's one thing that we miss. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, coming from the East, you must too, the colors.
Mm. Oh, I do miss the colors.
The colors are just, we have colors. You can walk to Baraboo and the Bluffs, so just drive west, and you'll get pretty close.
They aren't
but,
as good.
But it's not as pervasive. I mean, it's all over. You're surrounded by it.
I know.
And it's just so exciting, October back east. Yeah. But anyway,
well, just how we got to Eagle Heights.
Oh yeah, how did you get to Eagle Heights?
Eagle Heights. Well, I was in my program was Romance Languages and Literature.
Okay.
Italian was the major.
Okay.
In there, and from UMass. I applied to different schools, and so Michigan looked appealing. And so we went to Michigan, and there was a very small department there. And so I said, okay, after doing my master's, I said, that's enough. I think I'll push on because, I don't know, it just, you know, you need some motivation. So we came out here, interviewed, and they were, the faculty was, there were, you know, more people. And it just seemed a little bit more exciting because at Michigan we only had two professors. One was really, really great. I mean, I could have studied with him, but I felt as if the 2 years, 3 years, 2.5 years was it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just wanted to expand that a little more. And so we came out here, and we came out here in spring break of whatever year it was, 77, spring break of 77 in Michigan. So that was about, actually, it was about pretty close to this time, early March. And they said, okay, you can come, fine and dandy. And so that was it. And so in the summer, by the 4th of July, we were at Eagle Heights.
Yeah, we found out about student housing and being poor students. We, you know, it was a good deal, a great deal.
I think, yeah, maybe it wasn't the package that the department sent, you know, about places to live, and you may want to consider Eagle Heights, and you may want to consider the apartment. Eagle Heights, what's Eagle Heights? The name is appealing, anyway.
It is appealing, isn't it? Something above everything, yeah. With birds.
And we did get an apartment on the second floor in the corner, of course, the corner. And, yeah, we were really thrilled. I mean, it was small. They didn't even have the pitched roofs on the apartments in those days. It was like a flat roof.
Yeah.
No air conditioning.
Yeah.
No air conditioning.
Yeah.
So it was, the summers were rough because the we had, like, the hottest summer and some of the coldest winters ever there. The apartments were always warm, but the summer, they were just
they were hot. Yeah.
Of course, we didn't have the air conditioning. They would not have air conditioning.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And with the flat roofs, it was bad. But,
but
we were in love. We thought, I'll tell you some funny things we thought. We thought, because we, you know, well, I remember the first, as soon as we moved in, like the next day, we walked down here.
Mm.
And it was like, wow, you know, the Memorial Union, and people were out having a good time.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, it was so great. And we used to tell everybody back east that there was no traffic in Madison because we never took our car out.
Because, well, you living in Eagle Heights, you don't just walk back
exactly.
And forth along the lake.
Or ride your bike. And then we used to, they didn't have such good bus service like they have now, but they had some. And they used to have, and there was a little store, El Rancho, it was a little supermarket right across from, what's there now?
Well, it's University Ave and, not Allen.
Sherwood?
No, not Sherwood. What's the name of that? Farley.
bar. They did right in the corner. There was a nice little bar.
Where the university, where the UPS store is on, what's there now? UPS and what else is there?
Do you know where we do?
Yeah, I think
you
I
come
know,
down
yeah, once you come out.
By that Frank Lloyd Wright Church,
yeah,
and you come
okay,
down
yeah,
right across
yeah,
the street there.
Yeah,
anyway, so
that.
That's about as far as we ever went. I mean,
yeah,
it was
why?
There, and then downtown they had a nice Goodwill, you know, in the basement
oh,
there.
Yeah.
It was really cool,
the
so you could
was right
go
here,
in there and
right
buy
in the corner of State and Lake.
Yeah.
Where, and there used to be a Rennebaum. Rennebaum was the where we used to get our coffee. Everybody,
okay.
The Union coffee sucked. And so everybody, and there were Rennebaums here, and there was one across from Dan High's on University Ave.
Yeah.
And so we'd take coffee breaks, and that was really good. Rennebaum's was a chain of grocery stores, like Rexall's, back
I,
east. And
the main point being that we were very insulated. We hardly ever left the campus.
Right.
And, of course,
right.
Once we decided the garden, once we, you know, just to save money, and we, Peter always gardened anyways. So the gardens just fell right into those.
So did you have a garden the first summer you moved here? Did you have a garden in 78 then?
Probably in 78, because 77, if I remember correctly, we were busy. Here's the apartment, this is the rent,
yeah.
And they give you a couple of cans of paint, and you're on your own. I said, okay. I don't know if things have changed.
I don't know much about the housing.
But
right
back
now,
then, that's it. They left a couple of cans of paint.
Yeah. Just tell the stoop.
Yeah. Welcome.
All, yeah, welcome. Which was fine. We knew how to paint.
They're cozy. Those little apartments. I mean, I thought we had plenty of room for two people. Mm-hmm. And so I think what we did was that first summer, if I remember right, first we went back east. Because we had left stuff back there, and we had to pick it up. And then we came back, and we got ourselves organized, and kind of got the apartment organized. And then through word of mouth and walking, because it certainly is, like you said, it's a beautiful place to walk through. And wow, and walking and talking to people. Over at the community center, I think there were a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, you should garden. So how do you do that? You know? And that was the thing. How do you do that? How did we do that? I'm thinking today it's so structured with the internet and with the plot assignments and everything.
It was different.
It was very different.
Yeah, so how...
It was very laid back. First of all, own your plot. Every year you get a different plot because they used to plow the whole area over. You've heard this already. Yeah.
The dairy barns down here, and I don't know where else the university got it, but there used to be piles, huge piles. Like now there's leaf piles there, you know, that they gather and they mulch with leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But back then they used to bring up the manure.
From the cows.
And all the, you know, the bedding and the straw and all the manure stuff. And just leave it there for a while towards the end of the season. And the end of the season, I think, was November 15th. There used to be a declared end of the season.
I think it was the end of October.
I don't think it was that early.
All right, November 12th.
Maybe November 15th. When did the guys have to have the boats out of the lake? Was it October 15th or November 15th? It was towards, I think it was November. Well, maybe she's right. I don't remember exactly. But October 15th, darn it, is still early.
I think it was the beginning of November.
The beginning of November. Okay.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
They used to close off. That's it. Officially, the gardens would be closed. And there were a couple of ramifications of that. Number one, if that meant it was in an invitation to everybody, to anybody, to walk through the gardens, because nobody had proprietary interest in there anymore. You know, you didn't, you know what I mean? That was the closing date.
So over the season, though, you owned your plot.
You owned your plot.
But you never had the same one year after year?
No. It was sort of random assigned, as far as I remember. I don't know if you could ask for the same ones.
I don't remember.
I think you could, but I think you could if you wanted to. But what they would do is they would come in, you know, take down the posts and everything, plow it all up and spread the manure, and then it would be ready for the spring.
Oh, okay.
So, and then one of the things that garden committee had to go was go and plot them out every year. They had to replot all the plots.
Replot, yeah.
So of course nobody had perennials. It was all annuals.
Or, like now I see there's grapevines up there, and some people have fruit trees in their pots. No, you couldn't. You really couldn't, because number one, you weren't assured that you were going to get your
plot
again.
And then they were going to plow.
And then secondly, that's right. And the plow kind of didn't battle. It just went over the whole area.
And I think over the years there was too much of a buildup of phosphorus. I think that's what I heard, and so they stopped doing that they were just getting too much of that in the soil, so they stopped.
Oh, and the runoff to the lake.
Yeah, and the runoff to the lake too. So, but I think even for the gardening, but the gardening was, I mean, the amount of produce we used to get was just, not that we don't still, but it was amazing. I mean, we have they had that one picture at our little apartment, you know, legging, you know. God, melons and eggplants and, oh my God, so much food.
Do you have any pictures? I'd love to see pictures.
Sadly,
of the garden, no.
Contemporary pictures, but not, and contemporary meaning in the you know, from like 2000 forward. But because you look back, I don't know, we just didn't take pictures. We took pictures of the produce when we got home, like Donna said.
I'll try to go through them and see if I can pick up some stuff. I mean, pictures of us really happy with, like, the whole powder just full of melons. We used to give a lot of it away, of course, you had to. I mean, but we had a freezer in our apartment. We used to fill that freezer up with eggplant and eggplant parmesan and with tomatoes and tomato sauce. And I think we were like foodies. I mean, we couldn't throw anything away. We've never been able to do that. But I look back now and I go, who the hell ate all this stuff? Obviously, we
know.
But it was just part of our life.
And for any grad student, it is such great therapy.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's why. See, the thing is, you know, you're under pressure at school and everything, and you just want a place to relax and get your mind off things, and you start spading, you start weeding. Tying the tomatoes. Oh, and one other thing about Eagle Heights Garden, and this is true, at least in our experience, I think there's been a no-chemical environment up there, you know, like fertilizer, artificial, you know what I'm saying, store-bought fertilizer, or even weed killers, or insecticides and things like that. I don't know if people use it, but since this goes back to the 70s too. I think it was, you're not supposed to use that kind of stuff. Try to keep it as natural as possible.
And the other thing is they didn't have the shed with the tools that belonged. You had to bring your own tools. I know they had water up there, but you were sort of self-sufficient. You had to buy your own, use your own tools. But it was such a wonderful experience to watch how, because people from foreign countries garden completely differently. Now there's a lot of Asian people up there, and they have their own, there weren't as many in those days, but they have their own way of doing it. It's so beautiful. I mean, they get in there early, and they stay late, and they really guard their little plants. I don't ever remember that being quite so, it was more sort of, you know, big tomato plants, lots of sunflowers, big things. You sort of, what you think of the 70s, big stuff.
Big stuff.
But I mean, now it seems like there's an awful lot of, cultivating, like, not arugula, what's that, radicchio, and these little delicate little lettuces that people have the time to do that. You know, I see the produce changing, you know.
Interesting.
Because I find it fascinating. I like to walk through and just see. And of course, in those days, was it all students?
That's important. Yeah, it was all students. Our experience, it's sort of a dual type. While we were students, and then post-student life, it was just Eagle Heights. And I don't remember. Because then I was on the committee too, one of the years in the 78, 79. I don't remember not having enough pots for everybody. that there was a waiting list or anything?
I don't think so.
There
no.
may have been a small one.
Okay.
But I don't really recall.
No, because we had a double garden. We used to have
well,
two gardens.
This is what happened. Yeah, if you if you
volunteered
and you were on the committee, I guess they would give you. How much were we paying? It was really minimal.
Yeah.
The rents were really
cheap. Yeah.
Cheap back then.
If it was $5, I'd be surprised. And I can't remember, but it was very little.
And it was just a matter of, if I remember right, like in the block of buildings, we lived in 501H. Okay. Is it 501H, Donna?
Uh-huh.
Or is it 501H? And then the committee maybe would go around and say, okay, you're responsible for, say, these three or four or five, a certain number of buildings in that vicinity. Mm-hmm. And so anybody in these
that's
buildings
right.
who wants a garden, these are the plots. And I guess you could get a list. It was sort of controlled like that, you know, so it wasn't totally random.
I think people used to just call us up and say they wanted a garden.
Yeah, and I'd say, okay, you, and just numerically.
And sign it.
You say, your plot is 103. And then
yeah, it was
somebody.
Okay, so you just got a list of plots, and then you just go down
just
the list.
Just assign them, yeah.
Right.
I don't think we ever did like cleanups and anything. I think everybody was responsible for their own.
I think there was a work day.
Was there?
You had to do something at the beginning and at the end.
Oh,
there were two.
I don't remember that.
Yes, there were two work days. Now they have more. There's you know throughout the season, but you had to do something at the beginning of the season and a cleanup at the end. Just go around. You just didn't leave it, Donna. You just didn't abandon it.
And we used to downhill ski there.
Hold that thought.
I have a good picture of that.
That's true. But see, it was the whole thing.
You can't do that anymore, can you?
That's great.
The whole thing with Eagle Heights. And you know, you feel it when you go up there, the Eagle Heights Garden, the whole natural area. That right in the middle of the city. You were sort of in a Eden-esque environment, especially in the summertime in Wisconsin.
Mm, yeah.
And you can hear the crickets, and the sun is beating, and it's like, oh my goodness, and everything's growing.
It's so aesthetic and pleasing to go up there, from the beginning, from when people first start to the very end. Oh, you start to tell her about it in November when the plots were all done. Then it was
a free-for-all. Okay.
It was a free-for-all. You could go up with your bags and you could pick
it
up any produce that wasn't picked.
I don't remember vandalism, and I don't remember anybody ever.
Problems.
I mean, there was so much bounty because in another few weeks, you never knew when the plow would come. But in a few weeks, all that extra produce, so to speak, was going to be plowed under. You know, that's it. That was the rule. You just plowed it under along with the manure.
Yeah.
And
but it was that was after a certain date, like everybody
after a certain
pick
date.
What you want by November 1st and then that was
announced. You know, closing day will be, and then you may have had about a week or so, because like I said, we did not know. I did not know. No, I don't know if anybody knew when that plow was going to get up.
Yeah,
there.
Remember the time we picked all those pumpkins? we had to move to Middleton, and we, you know, we didn't want anything to go to waste. We went around. We had about 20 pumpkins. Well, you know, you can eat them. They're small ones.
Yeah.
You know, they're
I think those were edible pumpkins.
And they were edible pumpkins. Well, anyways, we moved into this apartment building, and we put them in our storage area in the basement. And, well, you know, about a month and a half later, the superintendent's at the door, and he says, what the hell is dying in your locker? Get that stuff out of there. And I went down there, and, you know, I had them all in rows. And they looked all right. You picked them up, and they were all rotten. And I couldn't even scoop them up. They were all, like, mush. So I tried to put them in the furnace, and the smell went through the whole building. Oh, my God, I thought we were going to get kicked out. I mean, I'm not saying we were the brightest stars in the sky, but that was really funny. And someplace we had lived before, we had stored them for a long time. We didn't realize how hot the basement was.
Yeah.
And then the furnace was right near there. It was hot and damp. Yeah, it was terrible. So that was a funny story, but trying to save the last bit of produce.
So those were pumpkins
from the garden. Yeah, after the closing. Yeah, yeah. That was... Well, see, and then we moved away, so we had... we haven't gone there straight through all this period.
So when did you, how long did you garden, and then when
we
did
garden,
you...
We gardened, like, from, okay, I was here through 80, through, let's see, 70, okay, so it would have been 78, 79, and 80. 80 was my last summer, because then we had to move to the apartment. We had to leave Eagle Heights, so we were here through, like,
and
the
you
summer.
Weren't allowed to continue gardening
because we weren't students anymore, right? We were, I guess, through that summer, I guess it worked out. But then after that, we weren't, so you sort of gave it up.
And when did we come back?
Well, we came back, but, it would have been, like, 78, 79, and 80, 3 years. And it seemed, and I can remember the different, there was one over there and one over there. And I don't remember the third one.
Do you mean one over there and one over there?
In my mind, I can see the garden, Donna, as you went up the path and right in the front. And that's where one summer it rained like crazy and it was all submerged in water. The drainage wasn't that good there. And then we got one sort of in the shape.
The garden was configured a little bit differently, I think.
No, it was basically the same.
Oh, all right.
Well, where was our third one? That I don't remember.
So your first one was low down, like where
right next to the road.
Up to the road, as you go around the bend,
you
go down here, then you go around the bend, and then you go straight up, you know where the leaf piles are now and all that? In that general area, in the middle of that area, right at the edge. And for some reason...
Oh, we had tons of rain that spring.
Tons of rain.
Yeah, we got washed out.
And I used to be perennial around here, because even the path here, the lakeshore path, would always flood out in ruts, and they've done a good job.
Yeah.
They spent a lot of money and a lot of time fixing that, grading that.
Yeah.
And boy,
I think we only had that 1 year, though, after that. And then sometimes it'd be too dry, you know, and then sometimes, of course, when you get pests come in, it affects everybody, you know. Pest every year.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
We had a couple of years ago, we had those little voles.
Voles?
Yeah, they were.
Do we still have them?
We had made like a mound to put a zucchini. A zucchini mound. We had the zucchini on it. Well, you know, with all the sticks and everything, it's like a condominium for voles.
Yeah.
So they were in there. They were just going crazy. And so we went to, you know, harvest our beets and stuff, and they don't eat the top, just underneath. You pull them out, and you just, you know.
Yeah. And even to now, to this past season, we had beautiful, you know, carrots, fine. Beautiful carrots. But the beets, the same thing.
Yeah.
You say, geez, spread your lifestyle around a little bit. Why this garden? Because other people grow beets. They say, I have no problem. And this is the thing I was saying about insecticides and things like that. Like, 1 year, we all lost our beans. For some reason, something attacked them. And I'm not scientifically inclined or anything, but the word was that we had a mild winter, and whatever it was wasn't suppressed, and so it flourished the next summer, and everybody's beans, and they did a heck of a job. They just ate the heck out of the, just left the webbing, like, the folds.
Have you anybody told you about all the beautiful birds up there? Different birds of prey, and then swallows and the bird houses, and we saw some, not geese, but some wild turkeys or something.
The ones that
were those there in the 70s and now, or do you remember them?
Well, I remember them being, I don't want to tell you what kind of, because I don't know, but birds of prey, you know, look at the hawk, you know, we always call them eagles, but they make other
noises.
But, you know, those are always fun to watch, and they swoop down and get the little birds. But there's so much, you know, if you take a break
the
up
cranes,
there.
Yeah.
The cranes. We saw, you know, some cranes up there. It's just such a beautiful spot to be. It just is beautiful.
Yeah.
I hope they don't develop around it, because when you're in there, you feel like you're in another world. If they start putting stuff around it, it's going to be it just won't be the same. It's the idea you can get in there and all you can see is from up the top of the hill, at the top of the gardens, you can see a little bit of the water.
Yeah.
And then that field that they're making into a prairie or something. And then, you know, it's just, it really takes you away. It takes you away from being in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And what else? Now, the transition, when we came. So our three gardens, yeah. Emma, to give you a background there, they would have been like 78, 79, and 80. And sadly, I can remember where they were located. The two were located. One was like, as you come up the road like this, you come up the road and you turn, and then, you know, it's got that S there. One was right at the corner there, right at the bend where you make the S.
Okay, yeah.
I think that was like our second one. And then our first one was up here, and I don't remember where the third one was.
No.
Isn't that weird? Somewhere in there. Because, see, then things started happening in our own lives, because jobs and things like that. So maybe I was more preoccupied.
Yeah.
And Donna was preoccupied.
That's a long time ago.
It was, yeah, it was a long time.
What year were you born, if you don't mind me asking?
84.
See, so it was a long time ago.
It was.
And I think we had just one year. One year, I think we had two plots while we were there, because the first year we only had one, and the last year we only had one. And so in between, when I was sort of involved with the garden committee, we may have had two. But
yeah.
But as Donna said, it's wonderful in any time of year. And for us living in Eagle Heights,
so convenient.
You could put on your, in those days we got a lot of snow, and you could put on your cross-country skis and just go on up there and cross the street and ski on up to the hill. And one year, as she was saying, there was a lot of snow, the base, and it rained, and then the rain froze, and there was a crust, and it was so fantastic going down that hill.
That's amazing.
And skiing from there, and then there were some expert cross country skiers. Because as you go further in away from the gardens and into the path, the picnic point path, there are slopes and there are hills, and they go right through trees.
Yep.
And these, I said, oh my God, how did he do that? I says, I don't think so. I think I'll take the long way around. And these kids could maneuver right through those trees and down, and then.
Yeah, the winter room was kind of a playground in
there.
I mean,
from Picnic Point, we were up at Eagle Heights one year, and from Picnic Point, what did we do? I think first we came here. We didn't have our skis, and we came to the Hoofers, and we rented our skis, and then we skied back over the ice, and then we skied around up there, and then we skied back over the ice, and then gave them back the skis, and then we took the bus back to Eagle Heights. And then we got our own skis that was short lived, you know.
Yeah,
because
you
the
were
winters,
only,
we were only here for a short while, and then the snows, at least then we were gone.
We were kind of excited because they all, you know, you always get the idea that it's really cold in Wisconsin. Well, those two winters were like the coldest hot record. I mean, it was
cold.
30 below zero. When, you know, you'd look out and you'd see the, the vapor from the power plant, and it would just like freeze in the air. I mean, I haven't seen anything like that since, but it was exciting because, you know, you're young and any weather is exciting.
Now
it's like, oh, I'm not going out today.
And then what else happened? When we came back, we went off, lived in, we went off first in Milwaukee, and we always have had a garden.
Yep.
In Milwaukee, we had a garden.
Yep.
And then
we moved to Horicon.
And then we moved to Horicon. And
we had
a nice
great garden
there.
Yeah.
And then we came to Madison in 2000. And we didn't know. So we nostalgically, we were back up there walking around. I said, oh, remember this, remember that. Wow, this was so cool. And all that. And I don't know, Donna started talking to someone. And you know this. What happened there, Donna?
I asked her. I said, "Oh, you know, how she got the garden, an older woman." And she told us.
Oh, that's right. Because
you just had to be a fill-in at some point.
That's right. You notice older people.
Yeah. Which you didn't know. Which when we were there in the 70s, that wasn't the case.
It was much more homogenous.
It was mostly just the students.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe some parents. like you'd see some parents if they were staying with their children
yeah.
from foreign countries
but,
or something.
But not like, I mean, there's a much bigger mix up there now.
It seems, yeah.
Yeah.
So then, how did we apply? I don't remember applying. How did we apply? She told you to contact someone or other, and it was...
I think it was up at Eagle Heights. It was at that...
the community center.
Community center, yeah.
Then we got an application and filled it in. This would have been like about... how long have we been...
91.
2001? Have we been
probably,
doing...
Oh, 2001,
I think
yeah.
so. I think so. 2001.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think we... The first year back, I don't think we got a plot. But we've been doing it now for all these years, and 1 year we both had one. We're students. We're sort of part-time students.
We're over 60, so we're, you know, they
and
deal with that.
No, yeah. I don't know.
Do you want to know?
Yeah.
Oh, if you're over 60, you can take classes at the university free. As
really?
Long as the professor lets you in and as long as there's room in the classroom and you're not taking anybody's seat. You
wow.
know? And there's certain classes that are participatory that you
and
can't.
It's audit
you can't
only.
And it's audit only. But, yeah.
And
they're doing
no participation. You can't take a participatory course. It's just lectures.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And you can do that. And then to reunion members. And so there's an affinity to the university, I think. I think on that application...
We came back here to retire, so that's how much
yeah.
the city means to us. You know, because Peter, when we were students here, he joined Hoofers and he learned to sail, and we have quite a few. That's another story. You don't want to hear all those stories.
And I heard there is a policy around, I don't know, I don't attend the garden committee meetings or anything like that. I guess... It's not, I don't know what goes on up there, but I'm kind of pleased with the information I'm getting on the internet and the way they're managing the thing and the
yeah.
concern with the gardens. I kind of like that. I think it's a little bit more, in a world, you know, earlier on when the garden started, I guess it was... An experiment. I don't know. I think it started like in about 1970. You probably know.
Probably 59 or 60.
59
yeah.
or 60. Wow.
Yeah.
And
I thought it was 59, but it might be 60 actually. But
wow.
Still, it's.
That's a good long time.
It is a good long time.
And so now, and you know how valuable the land must be, and so, you know, it needs protecting. It really
is there pressure to do something up there?
Not right
no,
now.
No.
I think with the creation of the Lakeshore Nature Preserve
yeah,
as a
yeah.
as an Buffer. Entity, yeah, I don't think there is
yeah.
pressure right
well,
now.
Well, this is it. And I mean, for crying out loud, and the gardening and the birding, and it's just that's the thing too with the pesticides. Keep that stuff out of there,
mm-hmm.
and you just have a beautiful even at the expense of having a few rodents.
It seems
beats.
Very well run right now. Who's ever doing it is doing a really good job, you know. And there never used to be so much plastic up there. You know, these plastic bottles and stuff like that. When we were there in the 70s, people didn't do that kind of gardening.
So
and now
yeah.
there's a lot more. I call it trash, but it does get picked up, which is important. They're being responsible for
it's
it.
It's not trash.
Well, it blows into the woods. It is.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't.
It is. It does.
Well, that's why we have pickup days and cleanup days.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But
yeah,
I see what people are
I've had
doing.
To pick it up.
No, if you're into gardening and it's cold, you want to protect the plants, and a lot of those bottles, somebody was explaining to me there's a way of watering slowly by, what do you do? I guess you poke little teeny holes under a milk jug, you know? And you fill it up, and it
yeah.
releases its water gently and slowly into the ground, and it doesn't evaporate, but it keeps...
Placing the milk jug on the ground.
Right. Kind of, you know, just embedding it in the ground a little bit.
And you'll
see a lot more plastic. Don is right. You'll see a lot more plastic up there.
So what did it look like in the 70s?
What did it look like in the 70s?
So what... What are some of the things you remember?
Well, the things I remember, there weren't so many structures. You know, it seems like everybody's kind of, this sometimes is more wood than plants. You know, everybody's building something. That's one thing I noticed when we first came back. I said, boy, everybody's got a little teepee here. You know, they're bringing up woods and fences and stuff like that, little chairs and stuff like that. I don't ever remember that kind of things. In fact, I never remember people having like chairs, you know, maybe a little rock or a little bench or something to sit on, but there wasn't as much of that. I think people were spending more time up there. And
People are spending more time up there now.
Yeah, I think so. I think, because I think you get a lot of older people that like to just go up there. I've seen people up there reading. You know, they bring a book, they do a little gardening, they sit and read.
Yep.
And there wasn't just that use of plastics as much, which doesn't bother me as long as it all gets picked up. And however, the weeds seem to really, some of the plots, the weeds seem to really, where they used to turn it over completely. I don't ever remember it being so weedy. Now the weeds really get a hold. But you know, I suppose it. You know, yeah. I just remember. Don't remember. And I remember it just being, you know, sort of flatter because there weren't so many scratches.
Flatter,
but,
yeah.
You know, that's the only. That's just my visual memory.
I just remember it being wetter. And well, of course, wetter.
It was wet.
Yeah, it was a wet year.
Our memories aren't that good.
Yes, they are. They are good.
Your memories are good. No, but the thing I was saying is I don't know the longevity. How, you know, that I heard they were floating an idea that said 8 years and you're out or something like that. That'd be okay, too. I don't want to abuse... you know, it's been wonderful gardening up there. It's fun. We're going to do it this year. And I don't know. It's kind of year by year now.
Now that we're completely retired and we want to do a little more traveling, it's kind of hard because the fall's the best time to travel, just when all the produce is ready to be picked. So it might not be for us anymore. But it's hard to give up. I mean, we were going to stop last year, and then we just couldn't this year. Well, it's good exercise. We ride our bikes up there from the east side. You know, it's the only exercise we get. But
yeah, 1 year, what was that, a couple of years ago? We went up there and picked these cabbages. And we put them in the back of the bike. I think, was it my bike or your bike?
You put them in your bike.
My bike.
And we
had these bungee cords holding them down. And I guess, I don't know what the heck happened.
One of them snapped, the bungee cord got loose and snapped.
I think it was like a cannonball.
And that cabbage, I'm telling you, just flew up in the air and came rolling towards me. I felt like I was being attacked. It's a good thing I wasn't even close to him, because it would have knocked me right off. We must have had it pressured down, and when that snapped, it threw it out.
Because you're behind
it. Huge cabbage. What time you lost your load of zucchini on the street?
Yeah, it's so prolific. I mean, that garden.
We've had a few good laughs.
It is a prolific place. I mean, the water is there. You tend to it. And the other thing is, the advantage, I think one advantage of not reassigning plots, of keeping the same plots, is the friendships you develop. I mean,
That's true.
We know this guy... from two plots up, because we were next to him at one time, and his name is Rick, and then there's a newer guy now where we used to garden, but you get to hi, how are you, and it's usually, now that I'm retired, I don't see people as much because I go during the week. But in the past, we used to go on the weekends, and this is when other people used to come on the weekends.
Yeah.
And so we'd go, oh, hi, how are you today? You know, and you get to see each other. And then, you always said hi to people, even when they were reassigned. But all you had in common was the gardening, that you were fellow gardeners.
Yeah.
But now, you have a little bit of a history.
Mm-hmm. And people have always been good at sharing. Like if you say, you've got a great crop or something, they'll give you some.
Yeah.
You know, that's always fun.
And that charity.
Do you have a garden up there?
I do. I had one just for 1 year, because I've only been here for one summer. But
oh, good.
Yeah.
The sharing table is fantastic. You know, like we do a lot of seedlings. In fact, that's why we're talking about pine tree seeds. And, because they'll be coming pretty soon to start seedling. And then, you know, you can only put so many in the ground, and you hate to throw them away. So you offer them to your neighbor, or you put them at that share table. That's a fantastic thing.
Yeah.
And the produce is a fantastic thing because, okay, it's true. We like zucchinis to be just so big, you know, 6, 8, 10 inches. But, you know, they can get it.
I do. Huge.
Have you been a gardener before?
Yeah.
Huh? You've been a gardener?
Yeah.
Where have you lived other than Maine?
I lived in Maine, and then I went to school in Pennsylvania. I did have a gardener, and then I moved to Boston where I didn't have a garden. Then I moved to Martha's Vineyard for a little bit, then back to Portland, and then here. So I gardened at my mom's family is from Falmouth and Martha's Vineyard. So we've had land there for years and years. I know.
Just jealous.
So I go there and work. But I had a garden at my grandfather's there, and then I've gardened with my mom.
You spent summers at Martha's Vineyard?
Yeah. Or parts of summer.
I've been there.
Good gardening.
It is. It's my grandfather always tells the story. It needs more fertilizer, the one that we have outside. He's slowly declining, so he doesn't really go outside anymore, but we try to keep a garden for him. But he used it. We're about a 15-minute walk away up a hill from the beach, but he tells a story when he took multiple cartloads. Like, he'd pull a giant cart full of seaweed up from the beach.
Sure.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
So whenever we talk about the garden, he's like, that's a great garden because of all the work I did lugging seaweed.
Well, you could tell them here you're doing the same thing because they have all those weeds from the
water. The lake weed. Yeah.
That'll make them happy. Yes, they do that. Mm-hmm. Yes. Milwaukee was a good environment too for growing. A couple of years, we had drought, and things got really, really dry. In Milwaukee, because we lived there for about 8 years, and but for the most part, it was temperate. It was the roses just beautifully.
Did what you grow in the 70s, has it changed from what you've grown in the plot now?
No.
Like, because you can have the same plot year after year, have you changed
We grow basically zucchini, tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Usually we've scaled back on tomatoes because we used to do, like Donna said.
But you have the delphiniums up there because those are perennials.
Well, we
some
have
of the flowers.
Some of the flowers, and they come up every year. The delphiniums. It is a beautiful delphinium. You know, I dug it up, and it's not even that big. It's just about this big. And I left half up there, and I brought half back by the house. And it's really not that big. But when it's growing, it's just humongous. Huge, you know.
That's a difference. Yeah. Many more flowers. That is aesthetically pleasing now. More flowers than they used to be.
Because
a lot of them are perennials. I remember a lot of sunflowers were really big. But now there's a nice assortment of flowers, which I think it does your heart good. You know, that's never a waste of land, ever. Yeah, I like that.
Flowers, irises, that's right.
Irises, you wouldn't have planted irises. Yeah.
Right.
Otherwise, what's different that we plant? Not really.
I see grapes up there. I mean, someone has grapes. A couple of people have grapes.
But I think she wants to know what you planted.
Oh,
that's
what
different.
I planted?
You experiment once in a while with something different.
We did dry beans. This last year, the main beans, as a matter of fact, from that book, cranberry beans.
Oh, yeah, that's did well. And the cabbages, we never used to do cabbages. Cabbages grow, but you can never eat them all. They're just beautiful to look at, you know.
The thing about Eagle Heights gardening is you have to be careful because of our summers. They're unpredictable. Sometimes they can be hot, really, really hot and dry. Sometimes they're just right. And so you really have two good growing seasons, you know, like from the beginning to about the 4th of July. If you're cold, your cool weather crops, the spinaches and things like that, some of your endives, and things like that, because if it goes past the 4th of July, mine have bolted. You can't really keep that stuff going into September. So you need a new crop. You need sometime mid to late August, start something new for the fall.
Fall because it gets cold. Yeah.
That kind of stuff. But the tomatoes, fantastic.
Did you get blight this year, though?
Blight?
Did you get the late blight in the gardens, or was the late blight going around? No, you didn't get the late blight? Oh, okay. That's
good. What is that?
It made some tomatoes, not all of them. One's at F.H. King Gardens. You know, there's the student plots there now. They get like this huge scab over their surface, and then they all rot. On the tomatoes.
Well, we were up in the hill, and we didn't.
That's good.
Yeah. In fact, we thought the guy next to us had these fingerling potatoes, and we noticed all of a sudden we came 1 week, and they were all brown.
There was a blight.
But he said that wasn't a blight. He said that was the end of their growing season, and he dug them up, and they were wonderful. So it wasn't a blight at all. But I thought it was a potato blight.
Yeah.
we put in a row of Swiss chard, which is way too much because, you know, a Swiss chard, all you need is maybe 2 or 3 feet, something like, you know, 3 feet of Swiss chard is enough. We usually do, 8 feet. Now, why? Why do I do that? Because we always have done it.
And then, easy to grow.
Unfortunately, yeah. it's very easy to grow, and it's
and we always try and do beets, and we don't do onions. We should do some onions, but we do
carrots are fantastic up there.
Sunflowers, flowers, tomatoes, zucchini, cabbages, different kinds of lettuces.
Spinach.
Yeah,
spinach.
We're going to try leeks. Leeks pretty soon because they're expensive in the store. So.
And I've tried, this is what I'm trying to do, is more of the Oriental, the bok choys and things. There are these mustard greens that are pretty hardy, and they can take the different conditions, you know. This is what you want. What I try to do is, I've tried mulching, and I'm not happy with the mulching. I'm more satisfied with my own efforts. When I see weeds, just get in there. What I usually do is I use either a hoe or around the tomatoes, I turn over the soil around it and try not to make it too compact, you know, from walking in there watering all the time.
Uh-huh.
So when it looks like it's had too much, I get the shovel and just turn the soil over and just keep everything fluffy a little bit. And lately, I have to admit, I haven't been the most attentive gardener. This is the trouble. Like last year, we did all that. We pulled all the mulch, the leaf mulch, and got it all ready and everything. Then we went to Michigan, and we were gone like for about 2.5 weeks. And when we came back, it had rained, it was warm, and the weeds just took over again. It was so disheartening that I said, oh my God, now, and I sort of let everything slide. But if you stay with it a little bit, it's not a major effort.
Yeah.
If you stay with it a little bit at a time. Mm-hmm.
But it didn't go to hell.
Altogether. Oh, no.
We got a lot of fruit.
We got a lot of fruit.
Yeah. Even though we never tied up our tomatoes, our 16. One time we did 64 tomato plants.
64
tomato plants. We used to tie them all up. Well, I mean,
but
it was. Yeah. I mean.
No, because see,
but now this year we did 16, and we have plenty.
Okay.
No, that's the trouble. The lure, and the seductiveness of the.
See, he grows his plants from seeds, and he can't throw any of them away.
The catalogs, come. Oh, have you tried this one? Look at this one, and look at this one. He says, "Oh, we've got to try this one. We've got to try this one." And so, if you're going to try four, you may as well put in eight. You know.
Do you have to go soon?
No. You know, I'm just looking. Is my watch race at 20 minutes at 12?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
So, no, our class is at 1.
Oh, okay.
If you want us to ask specific questions.
I don't know. I'm trying to think, but I want to keep hearing this tomato story.
Oh, that's what it is. It's the seed catalogs that come. And so, you go from the Brandy ones, and you go from the Wisconsin, what was it, the Wisconsin 55 or whatever it was, and then you want these Roma tomatoes, and then Rick, my friend, Rick, that's why Rick does, but Rick is more disciplined. He'll put in 2 or 3 plants. He doesn't have a desert, you know. No, myself, I'm a glutton, and that's not really good. It's good if you, you know, but it's wonderful. the varieties that are out there. And that's another thing you get from neighbors, is what they're trying. Our neighbor doing these fingerling potatoes and blueberries.
Blueberries?
Yeah, he's got a couple of blueberry bushes in there.
Wow. Oh, it's strawberries. Somebody in back of us has a nice strawberry patch.
And his technique is, see, now this is something I have never seen, but he said he learned it, this technique of putting the tomatoes in these bamboo. He has.
Oh, you're next to that person.
Yeah.
Sorry, I mean,
that's where we are.
The grid?
Yeah,
it's like a
grid.
Bamboo grid, right?
Yeah, he makes a grid, yeah. Right.
So you plant a tomato, tell me.
And that's how he does it, and then you never really have to tie it. You just train it to go over the bamboo.
He lays the hose on top of the grid with holes in it, like a sprinkler hose.
Oh.
So he just turns it on and sprinkles the whole garden, and then the tomatoes come up through the grid, and the grid supports the tomatoes. The only thing is you can't get in there and weed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't get your feet in there. I don't know how, I've never seen him pick them. But
yeah,
apparently,
that was my other question. How do you pick all the tomatoes that are in the middle?
He told me that he had wonderful, wonderful amounts, he's the one who told us about that. Not sun drying them, but oven drying them. That he took his time and they made a type of sauce. We're not boiling it or anything like that, but drying it. And he says, and then you know, the concentrated sugars are just fantastic.
Cool.
So you know, it's these ideas that get passed on. And
is he the one that has that tree that's planted there with the hoses hanging off it?
Well, that stump. Yeah.
Is that his?
Yeah.
And then he found like this rotten piece of something that's all rusty, and then he hauled it out, put dirt in it, and put flowers in it, and it's absolutely beautiful. Even his stump, I'm jealous about. It's a big stump, but he's got his gardening tools hanging on it. You'll notice the next time.
Okay, you got, I will notice
beautiful.
It next
it's
time.
It's just beautiful.
Well, this is it. See, now, we never would have gotten to know him if, you know, next year we were someplace else. Well, you get to know someone else, but it's the continuity of the thing is broken.
Yeah.
And so, basically, this is what I'm saying. I'm saying that basically it's always been a pleasure to go up there, and the less, I mean, you need some bureaucracy, you need some administration, but I think administration should realize that's why we go up there to escape administration and bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. So keep the rules simple, you know, just simple. Thou shalt do this and thou shalt not do that, and that's it. Don't. And I think they've gotten there. They're doing a good job, and they're very.
Do they have a children's garden up there where children come and garden?
No, not anymore. I think there was in the.
That's one thing I noticed. You think there would be more children up there? Mm-hmm. Only once or twice have we seen, parents trying to show their kids how to garden, and one time we were up there, and it was like. In the early fall, and the people on the other side of us came up with it, and they hadn't met up for a couple of weeks or something, and things were kind of overgrown, and the kids were in awe of digging, you know, under, and look what I found!
Oh,
it was like a treasure hunt, and they were so excited.
Oh,
and, you know, I don't know if they helped do the planting.
That was fantastic, but then
we didn't see them the next year, which was a shame, because, boy, that's a wonderful experience for
it
kids.
It is. Yeah.
I'd like to see more children up there. And
well,
it doesn't have to be
who knows? But like I said, Jenna, we're not there on the weekends
as much.
So there may be. I just don't know the demographics of who the people are anymore. But like I said, I go up and I try to go early in the morning and do a couple of hours. And that's my intention to do it this year. Kind of stay with it because I want to do these time-consuming little plants, little seedlings and things like that before it gets too hot. But for hot weather, one year we had really good luck with turnip greens and mustard greens. And the thing, then you get surprises because the next year, you know, those turnip greens, if you think you got them all or something,
yeah.
Oh my goodness, what is, you're turning over your garden for the next planting season?
Uh-huh.
And you know, and you dig up these big, huge turnips.
Oh, that's something that wouldn't have happened in the summer when you didn't get
right.
it.
Yeah. So, nice. So the garden is full of surprises. Stuff that will grow from the previous year. You know, it's really funny how tomato plants, some are so resilient, they'll survive the winter. And look, little seedlings, little tomato seedlings, all by themselves through the snow and the ice and the frost and everything, and they're growing in the spring.
Have you ever seen the community gardens along the bike path on the east side of town? Would that have anything to do with your paper?
No, because I'm just focusing on this. But are they new? No, they've been there
10 years at least, or maybe longer. But you get up, you go up.
Where?
By the Barrymore
Theater. Atwood Avenue and back at, you know where the Barrymore Theater is?
Okay.
On the east side.
Okay, so
you go up Willie Street
out.
And you go up the Atwood. Well, on the left-hand side behind there's a bike path, and along the bike path there are community gardens, and they're kind of on a hill, and they are spectacular. You ride your bike along, and you just see this, you know, like, big 2 or 3 gardens, 1, 2, 3, just all along the bike path. And I mean, and on the other side, it's all prairie flowers, and somebody planted prairie flowers. There's a little Zima or Zena's coffee shop there.
Zuma's?
Zuma. If you're not from that area. But there's a little coffee shop that has a little space out in the back, and you can sit there, and then the garden, then you get the bike path, and then these gardens.
Oh, beautiful.
It is just, it's like a little piece of heaven back there, and we ride our bike there to go to the library all the time, so you ride by it, and every day it's different and stuff like that. It's just beautiful. Yeah, they do. They didn't, just 2 years ago, they put in water there.
That's the hard part.
It's the same idea as Eagle Heights, and I know there's another one over by Oprah Gardens, and back there's a stretch of land that's being turned over to for community gardens.
Oh, nice.
Where we were looking at the house the other day, that strip along there on the left hand side is community gardens now. So this, I think, more and more, maybe because of the price of everything, people are, gardening is cool again. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw that on TV. You know, what is this house down here on Observatory Drive? And is that Schlichter? You know, where Schlichter is, right across from Schlichter Hall, by the boathouse. Okay, that's way down. Now, as you come up along the hill, is that mansion?
Oh, yeah.
And there's a little park in there?
Yeah.
But you know, there was an article on TV this fall where they grow edible plants.
Oh, yeah,
did
I saw
you see that.
I did, and I walked through that garden sometimes.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was saying how much produce is
it was amazing how much produce they get out.
Really, I didn't know how much.
And then they bring the food pantry.
Nice.
But you know, that's inspirational, because you say, you know, you could put this.
It's beautiful. They have these beautiful Swiss chards, the rainbow
that's
Swiss
exactly.
chards and kale. And
right.
They're gorgeous.
We've done that in our yard. Like, we have a little garden out in front of our, we have a really small yard on the east side. And that little terrace piece of land between the sidewalk and the street, we have, like, rhubarb plants and some Swiss chard and different things. And then actually we had a few tomatoes this year, and you know, then flowers around and stuff like that. And people walk, and then we have a garden on the other side too, so people walk through this little path just in front of our house. That's and it's wonderful, because we live in a duplex, and we live upstairs, and so right the rest is a ice cream factory across the street. It's all cement, kind of all around us, you know, and there's nobody else has gardens right near there, except you go in the side streets and there's tons of gardens, but right where we are, it really stands out because it's really cementing. And like, I'll be sitting looking out the window and you see people come up and they look at all the flowers and the little kids. Nobody ever picks anything, but the little kids are just fascinated by what's growing, and the parents will, you know, tell them what it is. And then people bring their dogs along and they pee on everything. and then the other people throw their cans and bottles in there because, you know, it's... But that's okay. That doesn't even bother me. It doesn't, you know, it's just...
That's good.
But it's nice, and so many times, he does all the work. Peter does all the work, but I'll be out there, you know, deadheading things or picking up a few things. We're not very.
But it's the environment.
Anal gardeners. We're very loosey. And they'll be giving me all this praise about, oh, it's so beautiful.
See,
I know it.
It's the environment in Madison that allows that. Because, when we lived in Horicon, people were flabbergasted. Flowers? It's Horicon is one of those towns where it's, you just have lawns and maybe a few bushes and everything's square. And we just like to see. And the soil, actually, we had several loads of topsoil come in and because it was sandy. And that's what's wrong with the east side, too, it's sandy. It needs. See, Eagle Heights has got fantastic soil. I think that soil is just.
Write that down.
Fantastic. So it does.
Whatever the pH, whatever the composition
and whatever
is
there was before.
It's just good agricultural soil. And stuff grows. I mean, and then people see. Yeah, I don't know about the west side of Madison, but the east side, if you're free some Sunday afternoon or something, just drive through there. It's not just our house. Everybody does something in front of the houses. Yeah. That what do they call it?
Except for that one stretch of Division Street.
That's industrial.
And those,
those are apartments and people, they're tenants, and they're only there for a short term. But where people own their own homes, you'll see some.
It's loose. You know what? It's not that tight. Not that those aren't beautiful, but the east side of Madison seems to everybody lets the hair down.
Yeah.
And,
It's nice.
It's just something we notice.
And I think the city has somewhat of a restriction. You know, you can't be a safety hazard to traffic, so you don't want to be putting trees and stuff like that, or tall grasses or sunflowers.
Yeah.
It's got to be sort of. A couple of 3 feet or something.
Peach tree that has the branches that broke it off. We've only got like 3 little branches. You couldn't believe all the peaches we get.
Really?
Oh my God.
Just grow peaches here.
Yeah, that's a surprise. Right out in our front yard.
Surprise.
I mean, that's one thing that fascinates people. And this year, they were just they were so beautiful. I hated to pick them. The colors, they were just beautiful. But when they're ripe, you have to pick them all because they just fall off all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And then we have a quince tree. Grow quinces in the front yard.
What do you do with the quinces? Do you make anything?
I gave them away. What would you do with them?
Well, I don't know. Jelly? I've heard of quince jelly, right? I mean, I don't think I've ever had quince jelly.
It's good.
They do taste like an apple. They're not too bad.
You could eat them raw.
Or in a salad or something.
I usually pick them and give them to people going by.
It's just so beautiful.
They don't know what they are. But you can eat them. You can put them in an apple pie and stuff like that. Yeah. But they're not. Sometimes I'll just put them in a bowl, like in a red bowl, because they're kind of this color. Mm. And they're beautiful. And they'll last a long time,
And then
I just cut them out and feed them to the animals in the backyard.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. We'd have a garden in the backyard, except we have the neighbor has a beautiful black walnut tree, and you can't grow anything under it. It's too shady now, and the black walnut.
Is it poisonous?
Yeah.
Or is it acidic, or why? Why can't you grow things
about walnut? It gives off juggalone, I think that's how you pronounce it. It's an acid, and some things will grow there, but most things that you want to eat won't. And
the nightshade.
It's
the
nightshade.
The nightshade family, whatever the hell.
Yeah, so.
Peppers,
tomatoes.
I know.
So, and it doesn't take much because we've tried it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the roots will hit some of it and the plant's dead the next day. It's really.
Yeah.
Actually, every place we've lived, somebody's had a black walnut tree somewhere.
in Milwaukee?
This one is spectacular. It's going to be 200 years old.
Yeah, and the neighbors before threatened to cut it down. People have this love-hate thing with black walnut trees.
Understandably, if it kills all these other things you want to grow.
Well, yeah, but see, the half-life of the thing is going to be there way past our lifetime.
That's true, yeah.
Cutting it down isn't going to help.
The toxicity is going to remain. Cutting it down, they don't like, they're messy in the fall, rains. And that stuff you get on your, and it does stain.
Do you know how that happens? Yeah, have you ever seen that? That's It's a mess.
And so,
but the squirrels do a really good job of cleaning them up. Nuts.
She said to Donna, yeah, this thing's coming down. And then thank goodness for expense because they got a nest of it, and they said, oh, God, that's more than we want to pay. And it spared the tree, the beautiful tree.
And now
but our tree in Horicon didn't survive. My neighbor always wanted... The guy before us built a house like in the 20s. That's who owned the house. And then his daughter lived there, and then she moved on. And then we were lucky enough to find it, what, in 92, 93? And so we lived there from 93 till when we came to Madison in 2000. And my neighbor was always after us. Cut down that tree. You can make a lot of money.
It's a
beautiful tree. He goes, oh, it's ugly. And it makes such a mess. And I says, well, that's the one that was kind of interfering with our tomatoes. And so I just moved the tomatoes out of its drip line, you know, move them over there. And they were fine.
Uh-huh.
And as long as, then I realized it. That's when I realized firsthand that it was around 4th of July. And we had some friends over, and Lowell was up. He said, what is wrong with our tomatoes? And they were beautiful plants like this, you know, they were really nice and tall and beautiful looking. And then all of a sudden, they were withered. They were just like they had been electrified, you know?
Yeah, it was sad.
What is going on?
You know what we used to grow that I used to absolutely love was hops for beer hops? That's unusual.
That is unusual.
When we were in Horicon, oh my God.
It was a little more room up there.
And in Horicon, we used to be able to burn at the gardens. We had a garden out in the backyard. That's one thing I wish you could do around here, which you can. And we would burn all our, you know, brush and stuff in the fall, the leaves and clean up. And it really enriched the soil. We had a wonderful garden
Having that ash go right next to
That's something that you really miss that you can't do in the city, I suppose.
Yeah.
Can't get burning permits from me? No, I guess not.
No.
Some places you can, but not
And even in Horicon, they took that away.
Yeah, after a couple of years. We did it. We used to do it. And it was some of our best memories. You know, you'd save up the stuff and then have a bonfire out there. And
fun.
It was great.
Yeah,
yeah, it's fun.
It's fun. It's really fun.
So you go camping is to build a fire. Let's face it. Actually, even camping this year, we couldn't build a fire a lot of places. They really...
Because it was so dry.
They didn't want the air pollution.
The bore.
Yeah.
The ash borers.
Right.
So you say, oh, what the hell? Why even bother carrying wood from one campground to another? Because you're going to either quarantine it or you've got to buy it there.
You've got to buy it there. It's just not the same. But anyways, we were getting off the subject. We digress very easily.
I guess it's a little off something, but I obviously get off subject too.
I think
that we've covered a lot of it. But yeah, getting back to
the gardens. I don't know what the future is for the gardens. I hope it's. I hope they'll be here in the next 100 years. I hope.
Yeah.
You know,
so what's your paper, what's the theme of it? The use of land?
I'd say the use of land and...
How important it is.
The importance, how people have used the gardens, and then...
What it means to them.
What it means to them, and then the garden's interaction with the university organization, mm-hmm. because when you were there, it's been sort of integrated into part of the university.
Uh-huh.
System, but when you were there in the 70s, part of why there's no records is that it wasn't actually part of the university. The land was rented, I think.
Ooh. Okay.
You guys remember that from the College of Ag? I don't know.
Is that how it went? See, this is it. It was very loosely structured. Mm-hmm. And I just said, what a boom to have a garden. Because, see, we grew up in a family where we always had a garden. Grandparents, parents.
Yeah.
It was just something they did.
Yeah.
It's just something they did. Even when we lived in Ann Arbor, in the apartment building, in the back, you could, instead of putting in flowers, you could put in, because it was a nice southerly exposure, you got the west was over there, so south.
Where's this, at Grandma's?
At Hemlock Court. Remember that we had the tomato plants in the back at Hemlock Court in Ann Arbor? In the back, not in the front.
Oh, yeah. We've always dug up. Even when we were living in Eagle Heights, out in front, we had to put flowers in and things like that before they were there. I mean, we put some bushes in and flowers before they had done anything. When we lived in that apartment in Ann Arbor, oh yeah, we had all the front. Yeah, we've always just going crazy with flowers.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, all kinds. I mean,
it makes places feel so much better.
It does.
You can never have too many flowers. And then we've shoved the vegetables in between and stuff like that. Yeah.
We were in Ludington last summer, and you know what they do? They go up and down their main street, and I think they have like a community planning, and they put in petunias up and down the main street. And you know that in late summer, how they just bloom, and they're so hardy in the drought and everything like that. So they're really maintenance free.
But for miles.
Huh?
Miles.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite a community effort, but you can almost smell them. I mean, actually, you can smell them.
Coming into town.
Just right at the curb, all along. I mean, it's just really, really pretty.
It's just not that much. And I said, that is a great thing to do. And in Madison, I mean, we just have so much wonderful open space, and Eagle Heights is part of that. I mean, see, that was the thing with Eagle Heights. It wasn't just the gardens. It was the ambiance, the atmosphere. Because Eagle Heights Gardens and the hill, and it blended in with Picnic Point. And you could just walk and reminisce and think about
things. It's a beautiful piece of land.
It is beautiful.
I hope people that live there appreciate how special it is. Because when you move away, you do. You know, I think they do. I think people do. We met, and it was so nice meeting people from different countries, and we had all kinds of adventures. You know, we had people from Egypt and people from, I don't know if they were China
or Italy,
and you know, and they're all right in your building, and you have adventures with them, whether you like it, whether you like it or not. But there was an older woman that was living with her daughter, and she would take any of the produce I gave her. You know, and she taught me how to make pita breads from scratch and those kind of things. Yeah, and could she cook? She's always trying to feed us. And then we had a guy that lived downstairs that kept
that recipe.
What did he keep? A gerbil or something?
It was actually a chipmunk.
All his furniture was like made out of logs and things like this in his apartment. He obviously wanted to be in the deep woods. And he had a chipmunk down there in the apartment, would hear it running around and stuff like that.
He was a grad student. He called it in chemistry.
Yeah.
He called it critter. And he was going away for a while, and he says, "Would you guys mind looking after critter for me?" And what do we have to do? He says, "Well, look, just make sure the bowl of water is full."
Yeah.
And he takes care of himself. And I don't know where he had his food.
Yeah.
What critter ate.
I don't.
If we put out pellets, rabbit pellets, or something, I don't remember. But this followed a divorce, so because I don't think Mrs. would have ever tolerated this. Was a man.
I think it was the reason for the divorce.
It was the reason.
He was a character, though. But they were still friends. I think they got together again. Then we had a couple from, were they from? China.
Korea. Joe?
No, that other couple with the water.
Oh, they were from Korea.
But then
before them, there was David and Debbie. And we're still friends to this day. We just saw them this summer.
They live in New York.
It's incredible. Oh, our other friends were still friends. Well, they were in our department. And they lived at Harvey Street. And I don't know if Harvey Street, if they had their own. No, he used to come and garden.
At Eagle Heights.
Yeah.
Because he had a plot, and so for 1 or 2 years, he had a plot there. And then David, I think that's how we got to one time, because David and Debbie, they lived downstairs, 501 something or other. We were eight, and I don't know what they were. But I think they gave it up. They got the plot and they started doing it, but David says, you know what, he had to take a lot of courses that summer or something. And so
That will do you.
And that's the thing, you know, that should be understood, and nobody knows, you know, there's always a certain percentage of plots that go, you know, not fully used. Well, they do, because you don't know if a person's offered a job or a new position somewhere, and at the spur of the moment, they have to leave. And so there's, you know, you've got to give a 10% allowance.
I do remember a lot of cooking going on in those days. People did a lot of home cooking in those Eagle Height apartments. I don't know if that's still going on, but I think I imagine so.
I hope so. It would be nice if it
I remember one lady used to go, and she used to, she did, a lot of them didn't hit, you know, a lot of foreign students had hardly any money. And this was before you could get, you know, the loans like they do now, because going to school was a lot cheaper. But I remember this one lady used to go someplace on the other side of town to get chickens. She'd get, bring home live chickens and kill them in her apartment.
Because
they were cheaper. They were 29 cents a pound. And they were fresh. But, you know, she was from a culture that, that used to fascinate me.
Wow.
And,
That's really interesting.
And I remember I think they were Japanese or something. Anyways, they lived the ones that lived beneath us. They one time before they left, they cooked us like a 20-course dinner that I couldn't believe all this food could come out of this little apartment. And this is just as they were in the middle of moving, and we had had them up, and you know, and they cooked us. I mean, it was. You know, 20 different dishes. Oh. It was unbelievable.
That's amazing.
And those
That's
apartments
delicious.
Are so small, it's amazing. And I think they had a garden.
Back to the garden for just a second.
So this
was the thing. I mean, when we went back, we were really, really surprised to see older people there.
Yeah.
And so Donna spoke to this woman, and come to find out we had something in common. I guess we had been in the same department because she knew a lot of the professors I had known, and so you said, oh yeah, you can apply for a plot and get one. But I said, well, wait a minute, we're not students here anymore. We don't live at Eagle Heights.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't have to live at Eagle Heights. Mm. So I know Eagle Heights is a pretty huge community. I don't know how many thousands of students live up there, but I'm just wondering what happened. I mean, we were there in 70 to 80, 77, 78 to 80, it was, if I remember correctly, it was only for Eagle Heights residents. Or Harvey Street.
And Harvey Street, yeah. Yeah,
so I don't know.
Into 2000.
It'd be interesting to find out why they changed over. Either there was lack of interest or...
No, it's something that I'd like to... I'd like to find when that shift happened.
Look at the application, because you'll see your relationship to the university, if the Eagle Heights or something, student, union member, or some member.
You know what's really... It's really weird. We've been sitting here talking, and it's just drifting past into our. And I've been visualizing that, and they're like, "Where did all these people come from?" There was only us and a couple other people before. Boy, that's what happens when you get older.
So anyway, that is something that's sort of interesting up there. The transition, the change. In that policy, and I don't know, some of the policies that some people have three plots or two plots, if they can, my take on that is fine. If you really don't have a big huge waiting line, waiting list, and you can handle it. What I found was that one plot is more than sufficient. Because what we ended up doing is just growing pumpkins on the island. Something just like a field. And that isn't really right, to grow pumpkins when somebody could be growing, you know, having a little fun making a little garden. So that's not fun. It's not right.
Even a half a garden for like two people if it's done right, is probably enough to provide you with fresh produce as much as you need.
Yeah.
You know, sure. And then the rest is, you know, so they could divide them up. I imagine a lot of people would just want a half a plot. You know,
so that's why
they do that. They do that a little bit.
They do. They give half plots.
And that's why I'm, you know, if there's ever a policy put in place whereby you're limited to the number of years you can garden up there, I think that's only fair. I don't think anybody should have a monopoly on that. It's a great place, but it's also, you know, it should be rotated, and everybody should, like Michael Feldman says, give somebody else a chance for a change. And if you
ever listen to him, do you know who he is?
What do you know?
Michael Feldman. Yes, I do listen to What Do You Know sometimes.
If you've played the quiz before, it's time to sit on your hands. Well, it's true. I mean, we've had so much fun up there, and you go up there. We have a bench, and I think the bench needs rebuilding. Yeah. We made.
We got to make it fatter, longer. We can't both sit on it anymore.
I had some extra wood one time and just bolted it.
And a Leopold
bench. It's really simple.
But I'm gonna have to go look. What's your plot? What number?
Is it 13? 13, 15.
Because there's not 1500, so
yeah.
It must be 13.
Or 17, or 13.
No, it's 15. 13, 15. Well, a Leopold bench is just—it's a bench,
bench.
If you go, it's the last row,
Sounds
and
more impressive.
It's next to that maze. It's east of that maze.
Oh, okay.
The guy with the tomatoes, and hopefully, if you buy there this year, I'll try to have it looking a little bit more.
Yeah. Now the pressure's on. Now she knows.
I'm gonna be around. I'm gonna go say hi.
Yeah, do.
So. That's it, and I like what they've done by cleaning out the woods, you know, and giving the trees a chance to grow. It was all brush and all, and this way, I mean, they're putting a little money into it. You know, a little. I don't know if that's all volunteer or if that's university, whoever.
Yeah, I'm not. I think it's part volunteer and part the Lakeshore Nature Preserve staff. The staff is maybe two people, so it's not.
And having the shed and the tools up there is nicer. That's really, because especially when we ride our bikes up, we don't have to carry the shovel.
Yeah,
that's all appreciated.
Even more biking access.
Yeah.
With cabbage and shovels.
That cabbage thing, I could picture that.
Yeah.
Almost hit me. I mean, it was a huge cabbage. But I couldn't, as it was coming towards me, it was like, I couldn't even imagine. And then it just missed me. Anyways, I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I feel like
you've covered a lot of things.
It's a good thing you didn't ask us for our whole life history.
I've gotten
more
a lot
tape.
Of, I would.
You'll never listen.
But
pick and choose.
I think that I've gotten a lot.
Get a feel for it. Yeah, I wish we had more details, like exactly this and exactly that.
Details.
It's like in your diet. I mean, you know, to get personal about it, but that's what it is. It's from the time you're a child. Like, you know, like we grew up in a family where very vegetables were a mainstay in the diet. You know, and so, you know, this is the thing sometimes about eating out. You know, it's just not home cooking at all, or you travel around and everything. And so the vegetables, it's not that you can't go to the supermarket and get it. But what it is, I don't know, what the heck is it? What is it about the garden?
It tastes better when you cook it yourself. Yeah. You've got to give her the one recipe that floored me. I grew up in a family that didn't garden, so when I met him, this was all wonderful, and he's opened up a whole world of vegetables.
But it makes such a difference.
Oh, it does, yeah. It's a really, really healthy thing we do for ourselves. But he has this one recipe, it's the Swiss chard mashed potatoes and garlic oil. Do you know that one? Well, growing up, this was a mainstay. You didn't have meat, this was your supper.
Is It sounds amazing. I love Swiss chard.
It's so easy. You just boil some potatoes with the skins on, you know, scrub them, just boil them, and then just take a masher and mash them up. And then you cut up your Swiss chard and you just steam them to how you like them.
Yeah.
Then you mix it together, and then you pour slices of lightly browned, but not burnt, garlic that's been in olive oil, and you just pour it over it with a little salt and pepper. It's like one of my favorite things to eat.
But it sounds delicious.
But, you know, it's cheap, and that was supper many a night. It's one of my favorite meals.
I could probably live on that.
Yeah.
A friend just sent me something on the internet this morning. I was, how to peel a potato. It was fantastic. What they do is they take an Idaho potato, or any potato, and you just score it all around, and you put it in boiling water for just about 15 minutes, then you remove it, and you put it in ice cold water.
And the skin comes right
and
off.
And then you break it, and the skin just peels off like a banana.
Wow.
I thought that was impressive.
But
Donna says, when are we ever going to do that? Because
what's the point? I eat the skin of the potato.
That's
totally
right.
Why bother?
That's where all the nutrition is. Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
I know.
People are lazy to bother skinning.
People have this thing with skins, like tomatoes. When we make tomato sauce, I never peel them. And I eat the seeds, unless you have diverticulitis or
something. Yeah, if you have diverticulitis, then, you don't eat the seeds.
But I mean, these people are such...
It takes so much time. You want to take the time to peel and seed a tomato.
Yeah, you know you're not going to make it.
Oh, man.
I think better than reading about these procedures and processes and everything like that. It's to hear them from your neighbors, what they do. And that Eagle Heights has been really a sharing thing. We had a chairman of the gardening committee a few years ago. I forgot her name, but she was more interested in a monthly newsletter. That's a good idea of, you know,
recipes
and
gardening tricks,
gardening tips. Yeah. Things like that. That's a good thing. If you hear something, pass it on. But I don't know how busy kids are today, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, here's another piece of spam mail. Oh, my God.
And the most important thing about gardening is there's no right way.
Yeah.
Everybody should be able to do it their own way, you know, as long as they're not infringing on their neighbors. And that's the beauty of it. You know, you can't be going around telling everybody they have to.
No.
Do gardening in a certain way. Everybody will rebel.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a creative process. That's another thing.
It's
a creative outlet for him, even the way he lays out the garden and the colors and everything. Mm. I mean, you don't think of that with vegetables, but it is, of course.
I think, though, keep it chemical-free. I mean, I know sometimes a little, Miracle Grow or something like that does work miracles. But I use that like on my geraniums at home.
Another thing is they never used to let us use anything like machines up there to turn over the gardens.
Really?
That's something I remember.
Yeah, now they have the rototillers.
But, you know, for as we get older, that's not such a bad idea.
Yeah, but Donna,
it's not that much.
But that may not come to fruition, because if they limit your time up there to 8 years, that's it. You can't have a garden more than 8 years.
What's that got to do with the rototiller?
Well, your age, it becomes moot, so what?
We need a rototiller now.
Yeah, but that's the other thing, too. It's good exercise. I turn mine over with the shovel. I turn it over, and if I can't do it all at once, you just do a third at a time.
Yeah.
A little bit. And that's what the garden is, isn't it? It's all about degrees. It isn't as if we have a huge spread in Kansas or something, and you get the tractor in there or anything like that. And the plants, they all grow in degrees. They tell you, a lot of those plants, they say do successive seedlings.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, a little bit and a little bit and a little bit. And that's what it is. It's not. And in fact, you don't want everything to ripen at once.
Be in trouble.
I think we should do a paper about the squirrels out here. The Union squirrels.
I saw one this morning out back of Science Hall that was in a trash can. Yeah. And it, as I walked by, it was running out, carrying one of these cups in its mouth, straight up a tree. I was like, it's not even food. What are you doing?
It's going to shred it.
Oh, yeah, it probably is going to shred it.
I don't know, or not. May have had a little sugar in the bottom
maybe,
or something.
But it was like...
Actually, one time I saw a squirrel at his head in one of these. It couldn't get out. That was funny. We have that black walnut tree out in... we have a little teeny yard. And this walnut tree just comes over. And just to sit out in our little deck out there and just watch the squirrels. All the crows coming, lay under the tree. Then you know it's spring.
They seem to have a season when the crows come. They're not there all the time. They're there, the early spring and late fall.
Yeah, when they're migrating, I think.
Is that it?
They sit out there, yeah, and poop all over the car.
The picnic point is good. I remember in the early spring around Easter, sometimes, a lot of times, the kinglets come back.
Yeah, yeah.
And
there,
yeah, it's a sure sign of spring.
Yeah.
And
do you have a class today?
No, I don't. But you have a class.
Well, pretty soon. Yeah.
Pretty soon. I was going to wrap it up.
And what else is there? I don't know.
I think we've covered a lot of it.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I hope it helps.
I'm sure I'll be in touch. Can I have your?
Yeah. What?
Do you have an email address? I have your email. Never mind.
You have my address too, and you have my email.
I have your address too, but that.